welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Broadcasting live on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and, incidentally, the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. I have two very special guests here for a wee, I don't know, I guess you can't really call it a panel if it's on, if it's only three people or something. Panel's like, I don't know, four people or whatever. I don't know. I'm the host. These guys are my guests. We have two fellas, one of them known as Frank Zero. From Project PsyCube.blogspot.com and Jeremy, otherwise known as Violator Hellspawn. No, he doesn't work for David Rockefeller. From the StygianPort.wordpress.com. All right, so that's the StygianPort.wordpress.com and Project PsyCube.blogspot.com. Jeremy and Frank, welcome to the program. So, Frank, let's start with you.
Thanks for having us, Vinny.
And then Jeremy.
Yeah, thanks.
Uh-huh. Okay. Now, if I could get a brief explanation of just who it is you are and what it is you do, that would also be quite lovely for those who perhaps don't know. Frank?
Surely. My name's Frank Zero. I do a lot of research in different areas, and right now I'm working on a comic book called A-Star, which is going to, in some ways, intersect with Peter Moon's work and a lot of different diversified ideas. But that's my main project right now. And then we have some books coming together, one of them which is going to be called or primarily based on contact, different types of alien or transdimensional contact and stuff like that. And I work with Violator and some other fellows in PsyCube on just a bunch of different projects kind of revolve around, I guess, aliens, mind control. I've done some work in the Sync book, too, on cartoons. Just a lot of diverse stuff.
And Violeta?
Yeah, actually, speaking of the Sync book, where I was in the Sync book part one, and Frank is in the Sync book part two, and you can get those at syncbookpress.com. And it's, I think you've had probably some of the other authors on your show, or you will the rest of this week. But there's 26 unique authors in each book, and there's going to be a part three out, hopefully next year. And besides that, mostly I watch too many movies, and as a result of that, I kind of see a lot of connections and subtext and themes, mostly mythological, and which may or may not be intentional, and I kind of piece that all together on my blog and in my videos and share my derangement with the world.
Yeah, I think I watch too many movies. I see subtext in everything. Like I think I even saw a subtext in The Hunt for Red October.
It could be there.
It was kind of a literal subtext. Anyway.
Yes. Just about anything, really.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the scary part, is that you don't really know. I have a movie by some small-time, you know, independent filmmakers, and they don't really know the rules, I guess. And in their sort of commentary, they tell you it's their whole movie's about George Bush's presidency, which there was no clue of during the entire movie. It was a horror movie. And the only clue would really be that the main character was named George. So you really don't know what the filmmakers have in mind and what the actual story being told is a lot of the time.
I think it's better when you need to fetch some of the bigger clues. And that leads to, you know, just sort of searching in general and an attraction, mystery and things. And films like, I guess, Beyond the Black Rainbow or Pan's Labyrinth or something like that, more modern films that lay that out directly are bringing us in a new, more interesting direction, I think. But that really reflects older films' ability to space things out and make you think about things and include things in the background or in the subtext.
Yeah, I saw an older film called Death Wish with Charles Bronson the other day. Have you ever seen it?
I'm sad to say that I haven't.
Really good film. It was a 1974 one where he kind of, his wife and daughter get roughed up by these hoods or whatever. He winds up getting himself a gun and going out being a vigilante killer, you know, just hoping that he gets mugged and then he shoots all the muggers kind of thing. Great film. especially in this climate of gun control. Anyway, the movie opens up of them walking onto a black and white tiled floor into the lobby of their building, and the address is 33 Riverside.
Might be a bit direct.
Mm. I thought that was interesting. For sure. I took some screenshots there. And I try to do that whenever I'm watching films now. I'll take screenshots of the Masonic references, Masonic numbers, and things like that. And those are just the things that I'm aware of. There's probably a whole bunch of other things that have escaped my attention thus far. But, you know, it's everywhere.
Yeah, I think there's
Unfortunately, I have like, gigabytes of, well, probably not that much, but I do have a lot of pictures taken from movies, screen captures, and notes. I'll have to whip out a notebook sometimes watching a movie because I know I'm going to forget it. And it's just, there's so much stuff. So I can consider it research and not just watching movies.
That's how a convenient excuse.
Yeah, for sure. I think there's something valuable in being able to point out to other people the connectedness. And there's something really devaluing in, I guess, what's largely like a YouTube movement and on some blogs and websites where, like, everything is definitely the Illuminati or the Masons and every all-seeing eye is something to get worked up over. And the inclusion of those things that are sort of poignantly conspiracy-related, I think, is very different from the ability to, I guess, use synchromysticism as a tool in your life and then specifically to apply it to films and show people that there's this massive connective tissue, whether in some cases it's intentional or not. And then that's kind of what I try to do with the Tumblr account. I think I might have thrown you. It might be in the chat group related to Beyond the Black Rainbow. But just films like Dark City, 13th Floor, Beyond the Black Rainbow, sort of the X-Men mythologies, whatever, I found a way to just sort of put the images right next to each other. So you're repeatedly seeing, well, it's very direct that in movies like 23 and the other movies I mentioned, Manchurian Candidate with Denzel Washington, just as an example, you have in all those films someone literally up against a wall, usually covered in a bunch of what looks like mania-inspired writing, trying to rip down the walls of their reality. And in there, I give an example. I have a frame of each where the lead actor or someone the lead actor is talking to is having basically an identical conversation about being locked in a labyrinth or about seeing synchronicities and having recognition of patterns, but going immediately insane over it. And this is something that films like Dark City and 23 always seem to Star of Echoes, always seem to ring true. When the person becomes good at recognizing patterns, this is synonymous with immediately going insane and killing your wife and killing random people, losing memories of it and all this stuff. So I think that people need to come to a not-so-media-inspired understanding of synchromysticism and pattern recognition, and I think that showing the connectedness is one of the things that's kind of birthed through all this other research and in some cases worry. Now we're seeing something we can work with that's more of a mythology, you know, or a language.
See, I never think that it's obviously put there. Or even if I can't come up with any other explanation, it's just like the universe really messes with everybody at all times, depending on what you're interested in, I think. And whatever you're looking for, you'll find in every place you look, really. And it doesn't necessarily mean anything.
Definitely. Sometimes, you know, it's intentional and sometimes not. But, yeah, everyone's got their own subjective view of the world, you know, their own tinted glasses. And that's like if I'm researching Gnosticism and I watch science fiction, every science fiction movie is going to be Gnostic. And I'm just going to be blown away by it. But, you know, no one else will probably see that unless they are researching, you know, oppression or something and draconian societies. And they'll see that in those movies.
Yeah, I definitely see.
Although you could
a lot of science fiction.
Probably draw some parallels between the Gnostic deity Yahweh as putting us in sort of a matrix and tyrannical societies.
Yeah, you tell somebody this and they're like, no way, and I'm like, Yahweh.
Yeah, Yahweh, man. if you wanted to see a movie with Masonic symbolism, check out The Man Who Would Be King with Sean Connery. Have you seen that?
No.
It's basically two Masons who are in the military in some, you know, old-timey British kind of movie, and they escape to Africa, and they wreck the African tribe there, wherever that is they go, recognizes their Masonic pin as like the symbol of God, and it was because some Masons had gone there before and built, you know, a pyramid or whatever the case was, and they were like revered as gods until I think one of them like cut himself or showed himself to be human, and the gig was up.
And then Hollywood Insiders did a really prolific job of cross-referencing that with Star Wars, Indiana Jones, and The Road to El Dorado in scene-by-scene comparisons. And that's for lack of a better term. I believe there's one individual at Hollywood Insiders that's doing all that. I just haven't updated who that is. But that's a website where you can track down a lot of these films that some of them have kind of a weird religious tint to the way they're defining demons and things like that, and but otherwise seems to be rather well informed about aspects of magic and aspects of a lot of different worldly mythology, and then goes and uses that film as basically a backbone to reach out to all these other films and show the exact likenesses.
You know what this reminds me of? It reminds me of psychopathy, and how if you're psychopathic, you've got no creativity, and so you have to steal other people's ideas and or keep rehashing them or whatever, because you can't come up with anything new.
Yeah, well, I mean, that happens, I think, as a process of just kind of foddering out a lot of psychopathic media. And so when you're trying to cross-compare a lot of different, whether it be modern movies or music or video games or whatever, you're going to run into a lot of pathological tendencies, but I believe they can be seen in the corporate, you know, sector in a more immediate and effective way. And you can argue consciousness all day, but I think what we're doing is kind of piecing together different parts of, I guess, what you could call just random unconscious material and some propaganda or psyops or whatever like that. And that gets into some really dark stuff. So if you're working with that material or films, they're always about that. You know, you're going to, like I was saying about 23 in Dark City, you're going to come off looking a little dark and scary.
Well, I do think, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I kind of ignore, like I was saying, like you never know what the movie's really about. So why bother in most cases? I just kind of take what I can tell a story with and string them together, what shows a common theme. One of my videos, the first videos I made was, called Death and Dairy, and it shows all these basically synchronous scenes of someone drinking a glass of milk, usually out of the milk carton out of the fridge, and killing someone or being killed like immediately before or after. It's like in so many movies, it's ridiculous. I don't know how anyone's never pointed it out before, but there's definitely some symbol there being represented intentionally in these movies. And that's just one to look for, one of very many.
I've always wondered about this. In the last decade, how many end-of-the-world films have there been? Whether it's the end of the world via zombie apocalypse or viral outbreak or asteroid or a tyrannical regime or something like that. It seems like they come out, I don't know.
I think it's uncountable. You know, I think it's definitely a scenario that the human mind keeps trying to rework. If there's any validity to the idea of, you know, timelines, I can definitely believe that in the media and in the unconscious, we're trying to refigure out the puzzle of, you know, the end times or time when a lot of, you know, high energy stuff is going on. It gets confusing or very dangerous or whatever. And I think it's also just a great launching point probably for a whole bunch of writers who just want to start with anything from a clean slate to a world they can destroy with the opinions and problems they have with our society, you know.
Well, see, also, I always wonder what the mentality is behind filmmakers who make end-of-the-world films, whether or not they actually enjoy seeing the destruction and death and horrific nature of humanity being wiped out.
Yeah, I mean, I think that certain researchers have made a good point about predictive programming and a lot of the idea of if they're going to work out scenarios in the real world, they'll use, you know, psyops like to affect the mass opinion. But I think that starts to lose its footing once you see that a lot of this stuff doesn't really work out. And we haven't really seen a million atomic or zombie-related apocalypse scenarios we have experience with. We're more just kind of going on people's words about 300 ways it can end. And that's really a bunch of worrisome stuff. I'm not saying to not inform yourself on what could go wrong, But I think people get obsessed with, you know, seeing people being tortured or seeing cars being blown up or whatever. And that becomes a valid argument for, well, if you're filling your entertainment world with that and you live in a bunch of, you know, posh, air-conditioned apartments and houses, but you allow your country to do things like that with foreign policy, whatever, and you can't put down the films but can't interest yourself enough to change the policies that are actually hurting people severely in the real world, there's something kind of fucked up there.
A lot of times when
we can't use the F word or any of the other seven words that you can't say on radio.
My apologies.
Yeah, and I'm terribly sorry to the listeners who just got offended. I'm sorry if you're under 18. What are you doing listening to this broadcast? And also to the FCC affiliates and things of that nature. And it's at times like these that I want to remind the FCC that the way we think about you and the way you regulate our free speech is just to say, well, F you. We'll be right back after the break with Frank Zero and the Violator Hellspawn known as Jeremy. In just a few minutes.
The way it's going to be.
Never been edible. I'm a cracker, not a vegetable, fed to an extraterrestrial. The beat is so electrical, it'll pump your heart ventricles, but I bet you will eject it if I start getting intellectual. I am not yet credible, so until I can say I'm credible, I'll say that I'm incredible.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I am not a credible journalist. I'm an incredible journalist, which means I have had no training of any kind. Which usually means, as a result, I'm not brainwashed into thinking that lying, misrepresenting facts, and being your friendly neighborhood douchebag reporter is a good thing. Although I do have to consider myself in that way. My very special guests, Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, aka Jeremy. Welcome back, guys. Now, before we were talking, over the break, we were talking about fracking and how it's actually a lot more offensive than the word that is often used as a cover-up for it, if you know what I mean, the F-word. Because at least when you're doing the proper F-word thing, it's consensual. When you're being fracked, on the other hand, it's not quite so good. Anyway.
Yeah, there was a documentary. I don't even remember what it was called.
Gasland.
But it was Gasland. Yeah, that was, and it was the one where in Colorado, which thankfully wasn't where I was at the time, where people were pouring gas out of the tap water and lighting it on fire. I also had a friend, actually my only friend of my drinking buddy. He worked for an oil company, and his job was to go around the world, like checking the meters or whatever. And he's like, yeah, that fracking stuff. They're kind of blowing it out of proportion. You never really know. I mean, sometimes, you know, people on the truther side kind of exaggerate things, and
we're an excitable bunch.
Yeah. Sometimes people get onto the, you know, the 2012 thing or whatever the case is, and take it a little too extreme.
Yeah, I remember I was talking with one of my mates who I think he bought me this Mac here that I'm using, and he was telling me back in the day, I think, maybe halfway through 2012, about Comet Elenin that's going to come in and blow up everything and whatever. Right. And he's still sitting there smoking cigarettes and having the top shelf liquor and all of that kind of stuff. And I was like, well, dude, what are you? If you really believe that this is coming, why aren't you doing anything different? Why haven't you sold up your business? Why haven't you quit your job? You know, why haven't you done any of this stuff? As he's utterly convinced that we're all about to die very, very soon. And I don't know about you guys, but every time I've ever heard a prediction, it hasn't panned out.
Right.
Unless it's not a prediction and it's simply a recitement of what somebody's planning to do, like a criminal's planning to do a hit on a bank or something like that, and you tell the cops that, and the cops are there waiting for him, and sure enough, the criminal comes along and tries to hit the bank.
There is usually a good prediction. That's if the government's holding a terrorism drill, there's going to be an act of terrorism at the same time. That's one good way to find something happening before it happens.
Also, if there's a disaster relief drill, there's often a earthquake or a tsunami or something.
Interesting.
Like the Boxing Day tsunami, that was during a disaster relief drill. I think during the Christchurch earthquake that we had down here in New Zealand, there was a disaster relief drill going on with the New Zealand military. They had 1,000 troops and a ship full of supplies and stuff like that in the harbour at the time of the quake. And incidentally, 9 US congressmen and the head of FEMA, who stepped on a plane 2 hours before the quake hit, except the head of FEMA who stayed behind.
Huh.
Isn't that really nice to have
that's
federal
quite a coincidence.
Yeah. There's umpteen coincidences about the Christchurch earthquake. And there's incidentally a HAARP facility not 15 kilometers from the city.
Wow. Yeah, those are like all over the world, unfortunately. Mm. And who knows what they're doing with them.
Yeah. But anyway, comic books. Have you heard of the comic Judge Dredd?
Surely, yeah.
Have you read any of this?
Yeah, a lot of the just ranging stuff from over the years. I tried to pick it up when it just had different writers or artists and check it out. I'm in no way aficionado on that title, but definitely read some.
Because I've watched the new Judge Dredd film,
uh-huh.
And as a truther watching that, you just think, whoa, that's total Agenda 21. It's like everything that they say, you know, everybody's going to be locked into mega cities, going to be living in mega blocks along transport routes and stuff like that. There's going to be no work for anybody, like 97% unemployment or whatever. Everybody's just going to be slaves and the cops will be just ruthless fascists who can just, you know, execute you on the spot or whatever. You basically got no rights as a citizen, that kind of thing. It's like, whoa. It's a very cool film.
Yeah, I haven't seen the newer one. Yeah. The one in the 90s had a lot of pretty poignant items in it, and it could be kind of compared with Demolition Man, because they, I think, are trying to run the same ideas home. And if I remember correctly, it's a lot of RFID kind of stuff and super soldiers policing, you know, a lot of problems at home, including a whole, you know, race of people that basically don't have money to have a normal quality of life and things, so...
Demolition Man, the one with James Woods, like running an underground like anarchist society or something? Like,
no, you think? No, it wasn't James Woods. It was another comedian, Dennis Leary.
Was it him?
Yeah. I want freedom. If I want to eat bacon and butter and cheese, and right? If I want to run down the street with green jello all over my body, I want to be able to do it. You know, that kind of thing.
Impressive.
I have seen that film a number of times. It's a really good one. And I think I only watched it once after learning about RFIDs and the future planning
for
society.
You know what, speaking of RFIDs, have you ever seen the movie Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson?
Oh, yeah.
In the beginning, he, in his taxi cab, you know, thing where he's talking about whatever random conspiracies, it's all ad-libbed by him. He just made it up on the spot, apparently, and it wasn't in the script. And he says, oh, what do you got, a dog there? It's got one of those new RFID chips. They're going to be putting those into humans soon, you know? And he's this lone conspiracy nut, you know? What's he know? Meanwhile, some places you have to get a chip to get in the VIP room of a club and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I am really concerned about this, is that you have this element of what's called preconditioning or pre-programming. Are you guys familiar with this?
Yeah, predictive programming ideas.
Right. I mean, to what extent?
Well, there's no way to really, I guess, discern that. I was about to use the example of Lawnmower Man 2. That's another really, you know, a character just goes off on a really long, very well illustrated rant where, of course, he uses the term New World Order and things, but he's talking about hooking everyone up to a central system that functions with a whole bunch of electronics in the city, and a much more complicated, I guess, idea of a grid than we have now. And there was a commercial, I think it came out like a week ago, from some like traffic light company that evolved into basically the same speech. But I mean, the RFID thing it's very confusing and concerning. It's another one of these things that the media seemed more interested in getting us to totally familiarized with in the 90s than we've even seen proof of actually becoming a nightmare scenario where, you know, everyone's marched with 666, whatever. So as many times as someone is freaked out about that, there's still just all this media behind it. And yes, there are all these corporations that have gone out of their way to advance this technology and in the private sector and things like this. But I don't know, it's just kind of up in the air now. Except for the fact that I keep running home that they definitely put it in the cartoons and the films, and I see it over and over, and it's worded in very similar ways. They usually use the same actors in the same kind of movie. Sometimes you'll see a bad guy go to a good guy or whatever, but the film will still include the same kind of long rants and parables about, you know, technocratic idealist futures and things like this.
And not just films. You have George Orwell's 1984, published in 1949, that had telescreens in everyone's room that was listening to you and watching you. And, you know, Everyone Loves Big Brother. The two-minute hate, you know, we have to hate Bin Laden, pictures of Bin Laden on, you know, CNN or whatever. It goes back that far, even.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Nick Redfern's done a really good outline in his book, Science Fiction Secrets. And there's a bunch of other places, I guess, you could point people who have... for people who have kind of chronicled either people that were involved in the intelligence community or people who just had a very powerful intuition or some kind of unconscious link to a lot of this data.
Now, that brings rise to one of my great questions in life is, how much of science fiction is actually fiction?
Not much.
I've heard that military technology grows like 40 years for every one normal year of civilian technology, which puts them, since Roswell, at like 2,000 years ahead of us or some ridiculous number.
So they've got like an iPhone. They've got like an iPhone 2000 or something.
Basically, yeah. You know, I mean, who knows? Like the triangle shaped craft people see when they see UFOs that gives them radiation poisoning. In the most likely scenario, it's not an alien using antiquated nuclear technology. It's a military spy plane run with nuclear propulsion that no one officially knows about, except maybe in the case of submarines.
There is the other element as well that... have you heard of the theory that aliens or the UFO phenomenon is a big kind of scam to get people afraid of off-world threats, when the reality is it's just... classified technology that people don't know? Because when they say look at UFO, they firstly don't know exactly what they're looking at. How could they assume who the pilot is?
I'll let you take this one, Frank.
Yeah, sure. I think that the whole phenomenon is so multifaceted, and I think that there's a divide between the UFO and the abduction phenomenon that's unnecessary, and then there's a divide between abduction and mind control that is proven to be symptomatic of all the things that people feel in linear order in the abduction process. It gets more confusing when you see that linear order predates, you know, almost history, or contact with these kind of beings has gone on forever, but that there certainly is proof that the intelligence community and other interested organizations was really steering the New Age movement, the UFO cults, from the start, and still are today, largely in many ways. So it's meant to be extra confusing and layered. I think people make it more complicated than it needs to be. I think people who approach this field need to be more well-rounded. And we have a lot of people who can spout off the different UFO events or something like that, and that they're invested in the History Channel shows and things like that. And I think that's good to build interest. But the field, if it's going to take itself seriously or whatever, and have some sort of baby steps towards science or really deconstructionist scientific thinking, if that makes any sense, it's going to have to reorganize itself with a lot of this ancient data and a lot of the data on mind control, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it does a bit. Like, even if something's real or imagined, you can still use it to convince people to do things that you want them to do anyway, right?
Right.
Surely, yeah. That's like sort of angle to it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and who's to say that almost everything is a psyop, you know? Somebody told me once, oh, Vinny, you think everything's a conspiracy. And I said, no, not everything's a conspiracy, just most things.
I like Jacques Vallée's take on aliens as being interdimensional beings, but in an interview, he's talking about the Bay of Pigs invasion, where the plan was to project an image of Jesus that would speak in Cuban dialect Spanish to the island of Cuba and tell them, hey, I'm back, so that they would fill up the airwaves and the telephone lines with all this calling, and then the invasion would be a little more secretive when it hit the shores. And the interviewer was like, are you kidding me? He's like, oh, we had the technology back then. It would be pretty easy. And this was like a guy working with NASA and the government, so he would know.
It would be interesting. Jesus appears in the cloud.
Hey, put down your rifle. Everything's going to be okay.
But then you have, a regular, let's say, UFO sighting, and the government could come in and change it to whatever they want, or the media, or whoever. You never really know what the origin is, what the purpose is, and then what the story is that you get from people on the internet or the TV.
Well, there's Project Bluebeam as well. I think I'm not sure if that was declassified or something. I heard that it's a network of satellites or something of that nature that have holographic projection technology on them around the Earth. That they're allegedly going to use at some point for a staged alien invasion.
Yeah, that would be used either for a staged alien invasion or for some extremist fundamentalist religious swaying, which would probably function largely, but I don't think that's really a thing. I think it was mostly
one of those things that got blown out of proportion. I think can't even see it. Like even the Jesus thing for the Bay of Pigs. I mean, really, we're not, in the middle.
The realities, right? The realities of the way they do take care of that kind of stuff, according to what history we can get, seems rather far removed from exotic Jesus plants. I guess unless you get into psychotronics and evangelical movements and things, but that's a little nuts.
There is that guy, Andrea Puharik, who worked with Uri Geller channeling, the Egyptian Ennead. And he actually invented the hollow tooth transmitter where you can pick up noises. He did it for deaf people. Like there's, modern day patents that are similar, but don't require a tooth transplant. But, there's people in mental hospitals. That's the famous original conspiracy theory thing, is that they're hearing voices through a hollow tooth transmitter that was implanted in when they got knocked out going to the dentist or whatever. And that's an actual thing. It could theoretically actually happen.
Well, I saw an episode of Conspiracy Theory with Jesse Ventura. I think it was the HARP episode. And they were claiming that HARP could actually tune into the same frequency that your brain cells communicate at, like a certain number of hertz or whatever. And they had this little device with these two pads that they put on his throat. And he could hear the music through this device as if it was inside his own head. It really freaked him out. I was just wondering, if you could turn that up. Maybe you could speak to the whole planet as one, I thought that would be very interesting. Anyway, we'll be right back. Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, a.k.a. Jeremy, are my guests at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. You can even join us in the chat room there if you can. Just search Vinnie Eastwood Chat. Back in two.
I got some so-called friends.
Who shoot me in the face. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You listen to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. It's the lighter side of genocide, because in a world so full of cops that shoot you point blank even though you're pinned to the ground and you can't frickin' move, and cops that push you over when you're a 15-year-old girl walking away from a party that's not really that out of control and loses her two front teeth, if you lose your sense of humor, you'll go friggin' nuts and your two front teeth. My very special guests are Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, a.k.a. Jeremy. Now, there was something about aliens you wanted to say? Contact books?
One of our upcoming projects that we're working on is a book called Contact, which will come out through Sync Book Press. And basically, it's our kind of compiling of our data on the ufology subject, which I didn't really pay attention to very much until very recently. It wasn't until I was researching, I don't know what you call it on the internet. So I was wasting time on the internet reading about trip reports of people on DMT and ayahuasca, and I read a holographic universe, and there was a trip report in there, and I started seeing all the stuff about reptilians and mantis people, and I was like, oh, wait a minute, I heard that from ufology. So it wasn't until DMT became super popular that I really actually paid attention to ufology. Now I see where the connections are there, and hence my theory that they're not all physical aliens, or perhaps any of them are physical aliens.
Have you heard the theory that they might be demonic entities?
Oh, God, I just watched a movie called Illuminati Conspiracy, where basically if you couldn't see it, it was demonic. Gravity? Demonic. Electromagnetism? Demonic.
Yeah, that'll happen.
Yeah, sounds like a Keanu Reeves movie, like Johnny Demonic.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, that was Johnny Mnemonic. Anyway.
Constantine, you're close enough, I suppose.
All right.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen that movie a number of times, Constantine, and more times than I would have liked, in fact. Like, it actually, the movie now annoys me for some reason.
Weird. It's interesting. I mean, I like the way when he crosses over, everything's identical at that moment. So there's buildings and freeways and stuff, you know. Just, like, think about that. Like, we're affecting the spirit world by building buildings. You know, do these things cross over? Can they see all 10 dimensions and we could only see 3 and they keep going, where the hell are these buildings coming from?
That would be quite funny. You know, I think the demons and what have you in the next dimension would be like, hey, hold on a second, didn't Twin Towers used to be there?
Yeah.
What the hell's going on here?
They're having their own war of terror in hell right now.
Yeah. Wait, what? Yeah. It would be quite a terrifying war.
With most things, you can get a lot more information. It's just a lot greater work in the form of the comic. But I think the movie is challenging to, you know, people's paradigms and does have some interesting aspects to it that are Hellblazer-like. So.
Now, also, in terms of aliens and what have you, what I've found is what mainstream media does is they use people's belief in aliens or any group of people to just kind of tar everybody else with a brush. Like, we had Michael Laws, he's kind of like the Rush Limbaugh of New Zealand yesterday, was in the car, incidentally, demonizing chemtrail people and saying, oh, it must all be due to do with extraterrestrials and whatnot. It's like, what do chemtrails have to do with extraterrestrials at that particular moment? You know, it's just guilt by associations and sort of thing. And is if you believe in aliens and you ain't seen one, are you a little bit nuts or what?
I think that a lot of this has to do with the really prompt need to change terminology. So anything that's challenging academia as it is self-defined in the moment somehow is you know, related to the tinfoil hat wearers or something like this. And terms like, you know, go run and get your tinfoil hat or something like this, where people want to berate you with this for reading stuff that everybody else isn't reading or, you know, alternative views on things, is really interesting because it's kind of an answer all. You know, if you're in a group of people and someone says you're the tinfoil hat, the conversation's over. And people do find it really funny if you're in a stuff that they don't take the time to have an actual interest in. They'll keep trying to change the subject to something funny or whatever. So it has to deal with how much are conspiracy theories actually involved in our lives? How much are they actually affecting us? Besides all the fear porn and the conspiratainment and the exotic conspiracy theories that people might not have a lot of proof of, and then how can we kind of change our system of looking at things? Well, our chakra systems and Tai Chi and martial arts, is that kind of stuff important, or is that just new age, you know, hooey anyway? And can we start integrating that into the physical body and the way, you know, we look at lives, our lives every day, and the way we have social contracts or whatever? Or are we going to keep seeing things through, I guess, you know, like we were talking about before, over violent or over sexualized media or something like that?
Couple of things. I mean, acupuncture is now respected by the American Medical Association, and hypnosis was originally an occult, you know, table rapping, you know, kind of world where people were discovering, you know, doing miraculous healings, and they thought it was attributed to magnetism or something, and it was hypnotism, and they had no idea, and it became this sort of underground thing that they decided to pull out into the realm of regular science, which almost doesn't make sense if you think about it. It's not a non-physical, you know, science. Up until very recently, the brain was just, you know, a machine, an adding machine or whatever they had back in the day when they came up with these theories. But a lot of things you make.
On that same vein, psychiatry doesn't fit into that mold either.
Yeah, well, it's all around a complete misconception of the mind-body connection. And then, oh, I'm going to get a massage, or I'm going to get my Reiki treatment or whatever to sound cool in a party of people. It's a completely disconnected thing from, oh, there's something wrong with me. There's dis-ease in my mental system. Therefore, there's physical disease. I need to get to a doctor right away. There's such a huge disconnect there, I think, between, I guess, the Western and Eastern world and older cultures and stuff, that it's really embarrassing that I guess we've let ourselves be with psychiatry and with medical conditions, the whole thing, let it become so clinical and so disconnected from the person in such a weird regimented process.
I just read something about the same date that Karl Ratzinger just stepped down as Pope was like that in that history. It was Benjamin Franklin founds the first hospital in America. And people think, well, wait a minute, did people not get sick before that? No, there weren't, medical establishments, which is today the number one killer of people in the civilized part of the world.
Yeah, and that was really funny. It happened in New Zealand. We started introducing this food bill legislation to save people from poisoned or contaminated food. And it was going to be like real draconian, Blackwater employees or Monsanto employees will be immune from prosecution, will be able to come onto your property armed if you're like giving seeds to your neighbor or something like that. And what was interesting, you look into the statistics of it, how many people died from foodborne illnesses last year? Oh, I think it was 6. How many people died from medical treatments?
Hundreds of thousands.
No, 6,000. And this is just in New Zealand, a country of 4 million people. And that's just the reported ones. That doesn't include the vast number of unreported things. Like, I think maybe only 10 to 15% of bad vaccine reactions or things of that nature really get listed as the right. Actual cause of the medical industry. So goodness knows, they could be killing more people than all the other causes of death combined.
Sure they are. I added it up once, just all the ones that were officially listed, and it came out to the third killer of Americans, at least, behind, like, high blood pressure and I don't know, whatever else. And there's so many things. And I always go back to the cannabis legislation. Why is marijuana illegal when peanut allergies have killed more people in 1 year than marijuana ever has? The law of making doesn't make sense.
Yeah, see, I always thought that we needed a war on peanut butter.
Right. Oh, God, I hope not. I eat so much peanut butter.
Drop the jar! Drop the jar!
Might be an adequate distraction if you have enough extremist jelly fans to go head-to-head and kind of work it out over a large political campaign.
It's a new Democrat and Republican peanut butter and jelly party.
But they can't go together for some reason. They just sit there apart trying to do the same processes as one.
Yeah.
I think we successfully derailed the show.
With some description of satay lobbyist. I don't know what's going on here with the there's so much crap going on in our society. And to be honest, guys, I've been totally detached from it for some time. Like I've cut out idiots from my life. I just barely ever meet any of them anymore. I'm only really talking with intelligent people and things like that. So I think I'm getting kind of intellectually myopic, as it were. Like I only care about talking about things that matter. Is that a bad thing?
It is if you want to have friends.
Yeah, exactly. So it just divides you from, that classic music video idea of everybody walking against you, even if they're your friends and family. As stupid and extreme and like personal or, whiny as that sounds, I'm saying it is a general thing that applies to people who are victims, whistleblowers, conspiracy theorists, researchers, academics in this field, and all kind of stuff like that. It's really, can you go back and have a conversation with people who are, just really into self-indulgence or only into talking about sort of really, I guess, closed circuit ideas, so like football and the commercials that play in between it? Or would you, I guess, are there these people just isolate themselves with conspiracy theories or with the art or whatever, which is definitely rather eccentric, but I think it might be more constructive. I think that we've been playing sports and beating each other up and having wars and making love or whatever throughout the history of mankind, it might be more constructive, especially if there's science, that these are telling times or changing times or important times. We could maybe change what we're doing about that, not just sit around in a bar or something, or I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I do understand that there's important things that you can do in your life. And what most people do is they distract themselves from those important things by saying, look, having a roof over my head and doing what I'm told and sitting in an office for 8 hours a day and being stuck in traffic for 2 hours a day so that I'm too tired to take care of my kids is actually the most important thing I should be doing right now. And all of those other things that I want to do in my life, like write a book or change the frickin' world, is just a pipe dream and I should just be a slave. We'll be right back after the break at thevinnieeastwoodshow.com. Welcome back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. It's hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand, the island-chained nation in the sunny slave South Pacific, where everybody got a part-time job thanks to Fukushima radiation as an incandescent light bulb. My very special guests are Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, a.k.a. Jeremy. And I want to give out their websites again. So Jeremy's website is thestygianport.wordpress.com. That's thestygianport.wordpress.com. And Frank's website is projectpsycube.blogspot.com. That's projectpsycube.blogspot.com. Now, the word Stygian, what does that mean? I've heard it used a number of times, but I haven't looked up a definition.
It's basically like chthonic or otherworldly or underworldly from the River Styx. I don't even know where it came from, honestly. It just kind of goes with my whole theme I got going on here. Basically, my general overriding theme, I guess you could say, on my blog by sort of the mythology I get from movies, but that also informs the world we live in, the sort of view that it's a matrix and all that, is basically that this is literally hell, and not in the Christian sense of, you know, there's not burning bodies and rivers of brimstone or whatever the hell is supposed to be going on, but it's the material sort of incubation or prison or matrix or whatever you want to say that we're kind of stuck in, and that every physical life is a spiritual death, and every physical death is a spiritual life, and you kind of go back and forth between the two. And I don't know if, you know, reincarnation is true or not. I guess you'll never know because you go through the various rivers in the underworld, and one of them erases your memory, so unless you can remember your past life. But it's sort of, yeah, I put a positive spin on it, I guess. I mean, you could call this place hell, but then you think, well, it's the worst thing ever, but you know, a seed has to be grown in a dark matrix underneath the soil. You can't just leave it laying around. It needs to go from darkness to light. And I hope that with my blog and, you know, generally raising the global consciousness as a whole, just by working on myself, that, you know, I'm helping everyone move from darkness to light. And that's kind of the main theme. Try not to focus on the hell part of it, I would say.
Mm. And Frank, where does this Psy Cube come from? Have you ever seen the movie Cube?
I don't think so. I know what you're talking about, though. The Cube is just a theme that when Violator and Trevor and I got together, which is another guy in Psy Cube, we were focusing on, I think, how the Cube was one of the larger synchromistic themes we saw everywhere. And I know that personally, the Borg cube from Star Trek, the cube from Transformers, the Allspark cube, and the Cosmic cube, which is kind of where Cosmic Comics comes from, that is in the Red Skull, the Captain America storylines, a lot of other Marvel stuff, got me started just in seeing these symbols as blatant and having a lot of the same assimilative, archonic, if you will, kind of attributes and taking over other people. And it another one that kind of fits in there next to the cube is the black oil. Not that all these things are always used for bad, but the black oil always seems to be an assimilative, possessive force. In the X-Files, we see it as synonymous with what oil is in our real world today, but then it's also an alien virus that takes over people, possesses them towards an alien agenda. In South Park, BP drills until they drill out these Cthulhu-like entities, and then they joke about drilling into the moon and things like that. But the black oil is very involved in that plot. And then Spider-Man has this suit of black oil, which is, you know, with all the Venom plots and things like that, which actually came from the moon and, you know, takes over his body and possesses other people and then breaks into other kind of forms. And this kind of crosses over in a lot of conspiracy area, but the age-old science fiction idea that's in a lot of conspiracies of alien possession, of people losing their minds, a group of people being taken over by alien host or whatever, or rather taking human host, comes up repeatedly. I think it's all kind of intertied. But yeah, the PsyCube was just kind of coming up with a name to give us real quick, because we had been producing so much work. I wanted to just give us kind of a flagship, you know, icon there.
Well, would you elaborate a little bit further on some of the work that you've been doing? Because we've been wanting to get into comics and cartoons. And I mentioned over the break that what we're doing is we're kind of having more of a conversation, like you say something and I say something and then he says something. Whereas I like it when in talk radio where somebody continues to elaborate and really, really talk on a subject and bring it to light, as it were.
Sure. I think that one of the larger things that I've found that's driven me to continue doing cross-referencing work with the comics and the cartoons outside of their own field or outside of just growing up and really liking the stuff, particularly X-Men, a lot of comic-related licenses that had turned into cartoons. I kept seeing themes over and over that from doing, you know, any amount of shallow research in the conspiracy theory field or alien abduction field, or even particularly with the RFID and the things we're talking about in the beginnings of the show, they seemed like the conspiracy theorists were sure of the stuff, and they had their own forms of documentation, which some people argued with, and they had their own, you know, whistleblowers and conspiracy theorists or victims or whatever, and all these groups of people that went around trying to affirm that these things happened to them and are true. And there's not a lot of proof, and then there's all of these cartoons and movies that illustrate it in the exact same way, usually coming out at the exact same time that the speaker begins to start speaking about it. So as much as people would like to say, well, certainly this conspiracy theorist had this idea, then this person made a movie about it, and I have tracked those kind of logical progressions and the ideas, there's still this overriding thing of, like, you know, someone talks about a particular type of abduction case that's really strange, or a particular super soldier testimony that's really bizarre and links with aliens or something, and then I can't find anything to really prove to anyone that these people are telling the truth, although I can cross-reference their stories, just like alien abduction, to say that something is definitely happening to them. But then there's no proof divide, and then over here on the other side, there's the cartoons and the comics, which are reaffirming it and obsessed with it and never go outside of the boundaries of just reinvigorating these stories, if you will. And that could be due to the collective consciousness coming to, I guess, a breaking point, or rather the unconscious coming to a breaking point with ideas like about, you know, secret programs or underground layers or whatever. Or perhaps this is more a reflection of the idea that the reptilian brain is kind of buried at the bottom of the brain and is responsible for these bottom chakra responses that lead to paranoia and lead to wars and all these things. And perhaps just like Violator's talking about the underworld, we're seeing the talk about these underground bases and all these heinous things going on might be some reflection of an underworld or a hell-like place where people's memories are being manipulated and stuff like that. So beyond these kind of exotic metaphors, I can't give anyone any real straight answers. I've just, with the rest of the group, begun to take a lot of different fictions, different TV shows, films, and, like I'm saying, particular comics and things, and begun to kind of unzip it and say, you know, we're not forcing anyone to look at the stuff. You already enjoy the show, just enjoy the show or what have you. But we found an uncanny amount of resemblances between these things and certain syncs, if you will, with certain actors and all kind of particular stuff that seems to be really the fodder of the beginning of the explosion of science fiction, the Golden Age comic book movement that we've never shook off because perhaps we never took seriously as ideas or as programs or however you have to classify that in your mind as something that needs to be investigated further or evolved upon.
Now, you've heard of Jules Verne and how he came up with the ideas for a number of different contraptions, devices, and inventions that later became true.
Sure.
You know, And I find that that's a really interesting part about science fiction and other things like that that are put out as fantasy and later they become real.
Yeah, I think Gene Roddenberry. Sorry, go
ahead. I was going to say not just science fiction, but sort of the imagination. Where the heck did Leonardo da Vinci get the idea for, you know, a tank and a helicopter? And is he building off of previous inventions? But none of those things have been built. And like you said, Jules Verne with rocket ships to the moon. It's no one could even conceive of that when planes were, you know, barely dirigibles were barely in the air, I guess, at the time. It's part of that whole, like, what's on that other side that we sometimes contact and sometimes can't, and that we call aliens today, but yesterday was gods and golden chariots, and before that it was something else. Pretty much every religion and every kind of group around the world has a story of where they got their culture, who taught them how to make weapons and jewelry and so on, and it's always some usually tall being from the sky or from underground or something like that. It was the Nephilim or the Gregory angels, and, you know, in the Bible, and we have all kinds of giants being found all over the world. And, you know, it's very confusing, but it's very also interesting to think about, like, where do creative people get their ideas and how these ideas get out in the world? Is everything part of a motivation? And if so, whose motivation and who's actually influencing artists to put out works with reptilian, you know, aliens or what have you?
Yeah.
You've heard of the phrase, there's nothing new under the sun.
Right. And that's often very true. Could be any number of things, really. But I try not to focus on the downside, like I said, the conspiracies. I don't even listen to the news anymore, you know. It's just, you kind of have to work on yourself, which is what I'm doing, which I always encourage other people to do, is the only way you're going to evolve the global consciousness is if each of us takes our own initiative to evolve our own consciousness. You can't beat someone over the head with 9/11 was an inside job and make them accepting to your ideas. You know, it's just not going to happen. People evolve on their own. And like, speaking of inventions, you know, four people or whatever invented steam engine at the same time. There's a whole list of inventions that came out exact same time in different places through different people, sometimes racing each other to the patent office, not knowing it. It seems like there's a plan and there's sort of this gradual, you know, increase in technology and gradual increase in of course, going to space, but also inner space. And it seems like maybe, you know, I don't know if it's a Terrence McKenna sort of singularity at the end of time that's kind of pulling us forward, or if we're being pushed forward. There's always been theories that aliens were trapped underground and trying to get us to build spacecraft so that they can leave the planet. And I don't know, just one of those bizarre tangents that I like to go off on.
Right,
I think there's a lot to be said.
Go ahead, Frank.
I think there's a lot to be said for Gene Roddenberry and a lot of the ideas that wound up coming true with Star Trek. And if you're ever kind of doubting, I guess, the synchromystic ability to pull this stuff out of the ether and put it in just nonstop artwork, I would do a study of Jack Kirby and Gene Roddenberry. You know, and anyone acquainted with culture and history of popular events and inventions and things will see how ahead of the curve and constantly on point those two individuals were. And I would suggest a lot of the Christopher Knowles' work over at The Secret Sun, which is constantly, he did a lot of great work on Gene Roddenberry in there, but is constantly going back to Jack Kirby as the source material. And I found it very successful too. At the end of the day, like Violators saying, kind of stay positive with it. I find it most constructive to go back to the comics and to go back to the art and the work more than it is to just amass more data about possible, you know, end time scenarios or something like that. What's going to get us in the end or whatever.
Mm. Well, see, the advancement of technology, I think, has been unbelievably fast in the 20th and 21st and the earlier part of this 21st century. Somebody living in just as much as 15 years ago or something like that, you transport them to today, they wouldn't have any idea how things work.
Yeah, it'd definitely be very disorienting. I think people would be angry at the lack of attention span and change and just formal ways of doing things and communicating. I also think that with 3D printing, we're about to hit another mass arc, kind of like the internet or whatever, where we're really going to shift around a lot of stuff about industry and the way people get ideas out there and what the individual's capable of doing. And if we can use that kind of technological model psycho-spiritually and know that a lot of the data is out there to save the world or save our bodies, just kind of sitting there in a lot of different sources waiting for us to tune into it, I have a better direction.
Well, do you have any specific examples of this? Has this happened before?
Of which?
Of humanity kind of just locking onto a piece of technology and everything changing in a very positive and only positive way.
Oh, no. I don't think there's any example like that. It's just you got to go back to this idea of you can have a tool and you can use it. You can use a tool for something very terrible or to change people or control people, or you can use it to give everyone the ability to adapt to better living standards or something. And I don't have everything figured out to a T like in a Buckminster Fuller way, but I guess there's a lot of people I can point you toward. Jason Louv, who I don't know if I'm pronouncing that successfully, but the writer of Generation Hex just came out with a free book that I would tell everyone to look at. It's kind of based off this premise of in not too many pages, just getting reacquainted with how to deal with society and self and technology, kind of be psycho-spiritually self-contained. And I guess that can work as a metaphor for, like I was saying, ways to deal with technology and stuff, putting that in the hands of people and educating them, whatever.
One of my concerns is something that I do see happen a lot, is that people know how to communicate and have relationships with technology better than they do with people.
Sure. Well, I think that robot person is very required in, like, these days. Social requirements, you're not really supposed to talk about anything personal, anything super meaningful. People keep kind of saying the way that there's rules for, like, bars or churches or whatever about not getting into politics. I guess churches would get into religions, so I defeat my example, but that's the way that all of society is becoming. Everything's a touchy kind of topic, and so everyone wants to stay very much. What was on TV today, and what's the acceptable provided argument? I watched this show, but then I watched this other show. I sided with this individual. Now that generates public discussion. Things outside of that are considered untimely, unpop, and, boring or something. And so that constantly shifting, uninformed but extreme public argument, I guess, keeps people from really wanting to or being able to delve into things and be proud of it or want to talk about interesting topics they're getting into. Basically what I'm getting at is that we've already surpassed, are you going to get some kind of mechanical implant? Are you going to get some kind of robot eye in the future? Or are we going to have these alterations? We've jumped way ahead of that, and we're saying that, oh, that person plays video games way too much. But yet we all have this social requirement of, like, a Walmart or Best Buy greeter smile, coped with only staying on popular topics and staying with things that would keep people on a certain wavelength, I suppose.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but I've on occasions been sitting at cafes or around dinner tables, and the conversation simply doesn't interest me in any way, shape, or form that is going on around me. And I just switch off and think, this is boring. This is pointless. It doesn't make any sense. And I switch off, kind of in the opposite way to the way they would. We'll be right back. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. I was just thinking about this term post-apocalyptic, and it was interesting. You know the Kevin Costner movie, The Postman?
Right.
Yeah.
You know?
Postman.
Literally a post-apocalyptic future.
Yeah. The world after man.
That's quite funny, isn't it?
That's probably what it'll look like. Nuclear winter and radiated skies. Water you can't drink. It's pretty much where we're headed.
Yeah. To a degree is what we got already. Just thinking about this, if you wanted to, like, go and purchase some clean food, you better look frickin' hard, man.
Yeah. It's not, well, I mean, it's clean because it's been soaked in ammonia or radiated when crossing the border to keep it, fresh longer. Remember in, I don't know if you've seen it, but 28 Days Later, grocery store, all the food is rotted except for the apples, and one of the guys says, ooh, I love radiation.
No, he goes, irradiated.
Yeah, there you go. Geez, you're better at movie quotes than I am.
Oh, yeah, I can.
Fiery, Vinny. Might have to get you on the side cube.
Oh, I can recite lots and lots and lots of stuff from films, comedy acts, and things like that. It's a talent I had from a really young age as a child. I was able to recite certain films back to back.
Do you have ADHD or Asperger's or something? I find that I'm kind of on the Asperger-y spectrum. I have a lot of the symptoms, and that's kind of like we were saying, people being close to machines. I mean, people who tend to not be very sociable, like people on that autism spectrum, are better at machines. I mean, I'd rather interact with most people via the internet than in person, and it's not because I wasn't necessarily raised with it. I mean, the internet came out when I was already in high school, you know, basically when we first got on the net. So, you know, but I remember reading a lot of people in Silicon Valley were having kids with autism, because all those people with the same predilection in their DNA were getting together, and it was creating much more concentrated versions of that. And it really is sort of a new race that just can deal with the machines better for some reason.
Yeah. Either that, or they all really, really, really believe in vaccines.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate truth. Is I got every vaccine in the textbook. My dad was in the military, so we had the vaccine schedule. You know, when I was in Guam, where they don't fluoridate the water, we had to put fluoride pills in our mouth so that we could have that fluoride. So I actually had to suck on fluoride pills as a child. Maybe that explains some of my weirdness. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's the other thing, when you're damaged when you're young, especially if you've experienced some kind of brain trauma or something like that, the person you become will never be the person you could have become had those things not happened to you. And how do you reconcile that?
Yeah, I don't know. I believe.
Yeah. I was always wondering what I'd be like if my father wasn't violent, or if I never got arrested, or if all my bosses hadn't been psychopaths or something like that. You know, it'd be interesting what kind of a person I'd turn into, but he's gone. Whoever that person might have been is not here anymore. I'm all that's left.
You wouldn't be hosting this awesome show, so maybe it's all for a reason.
Well, I don't know. I think when people think fatalistically like that, like, oh, it's all for a reason, you can only look at that in retrospect. You can never say, all of this stuff is going to happen to me for a reason, I'm going to get to that point, which makes me think that people are attempting to reconcile things by saying that it's all for a reason when there really might not be one at all.
I think that's if you're more optimistic and saying, well, the good will come. I'm not. I'm pessimistic, and I say it's just going to get worse from here on out. But, you know, I wouldn't be here if it wasn't for previous, you know, whatever hardships or good chips in my life. And
I'm kind of dualistic. I think it's all going to get better and worse at the same time.
Split apart. We'll be living in, like, an island that's safe from everything, but meanwhile the New World Order rules everything else.
Yeah, that are a whole bunch of people that are just going to get even more retarded, and the rest of the people are going to become a lot smarter and figure stuff out faster, you know? And those will be the like people you hang out with. Yeah.
Well, it's more life than evil.
Well, it's a scary concept, and to think about, you know, who you would have been had certain things not happened to you. And this comes back into, you mentioned the time traveler. You ever seen those movies where the person goes back in time and they change one tiny little thing and then they come back and everything's different?
Surely.
Yeah, the butterfly effect was one. I'd use that. Then it was, you know, it's one of those paradoxes, though. Like, would it be a different universe? There's that theory that there's, like, an unlimited potential, you know, alternatives going on, like, in the future. So, you know, so many minutes, hours, years, decades into the future, there's more and more potential possibilities. You could quit your job today and, you know, go sell, you know, ice cream on the street or something, and that's Vinny, you know, 10 years from now as an ice cream vendor. You'd never really know. Like, there's so many possibilities, and until one happens, you know, that kind of sets it into stone. I mean, the other day I was riding my bike, I almost got killed by a truck, and I was just contemplating that. Like, I could have been in some other universe. I'm dead right now. You know, my family's grieving over me or whatever. And that could have happened so many times in the past, and it could happen many more times in the future, I'm sure. you know, it's kind of, I don't know, maybe my pessimistic view, I always turn to the dark side, but yeah, when I try not to contemplate too many alternatives.
Have you ever seen the movie The One with Jet Li?
Huh?
Yeah, he kills his parallel selves to make himself stronger, something like that.
Yeah, there's like 1,000 parallel universes, and this dude figures out a way to travel in between them. And what he finds is that if he kills himself in another universe, that person's power gets equally divided amongst all the remaining hims in all the different universes. So he wants to kill all of himself in all the parallel universes so that he'll be the one and he'll be all powerful. It's quite an interesting concept. Yeah. And they're all living these different lives with different careers and different levels of skill sets and all of these tiny little things that made somebody who they are in the different parallel universes. That thing didn't happen, and instead another thing happened. Like you were talking about, like you could have been killed in front of that, and in some of these parallel universes, one of those people actually dies. Or is already dead and things of this nature. So I was just wondering about this. And what is the point, really, though, at wondering about those other existences that you may or may not have? As far as I'm concerned, there's really only one existence for me to experience subjectively, and that's this one.
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, I think there's a point in, you know, you being able to see out of one person and being in individual, and then at the same time there's a point in going through the collective experience and changing as one organism or one species, and so they have their individual, I guess, readouts with that kind of data, to again use the word sync, I guess, you in the right direction if you choose to go down that path.
Well, we were talking about this yesterday, about how when you're doing what you believe to be right, and nobody can tell you what's right, and only you can feel it, but you can't really think it or intellectualize it. There really is a feeling here. Am I doing what's right? Is this correct? And it seems that when you follow that instinct, suddenly roadblocks in your life get pushed out of the way. But they don't get pushed out of the way immediately when you want them to disappear. They only disappear when you absolutely need them to. Like if you can't pay your rent 1 week or something like that, suddenly the day before your rent has to get paid, somebody will just turn up with a couple of $100 for you for some reason.
Yeah, I think we somehow we push those things into the unconscious and we're worried about them or we need them to happen. And so that's when you really take the reins. And in one day you'll do a bunch of things successfully and things will turn out your way. Well, you probably just focus something in the light of your mind or whatever to correspond directly with doing these things successfully, just like older magical or mystical systems are obsessed with doing. Aleister Crowley's idea of the will, I think, fits really well here. The idea that instead of what most people kind of savagely misinterpreted as do whatever you want, is much more validly interpreted as do exactly what you're here for and don't waste any time getting to know various systems and experiences or whatever to show you where you're going and equate you with more paths. And that's what he was doing magically. I didn't know the man. I don't know whether morally he was one to be followed, but this philosophy of take the reins and be responsible for the thing, outside of all kind of other limitations, so that you can get things done and can quite literally, in his case, climb mountains or learn various systems of yoga or whatever. That's a really interesting point, you know.
Yeah. Well, look at it this way. If you're currently doing a job that you don't like, don't just go get another job that you know you won't like just so that you can have a 6 months of difference. Quit them all and figure out what you really want out of this life and start doing that. You know, that's what I did. And as far as I know, the many, many people that I've spoken to on this radio show, that's basically what they've all done. You have to let go of what you consciously think you need, you know, like you need a roof over your head, you need money supply, financial security, that kind of thing. All of doing all that your entire life makes you really fracking unhappy, right? And yeah. And it's only once you let go of all that and you realize, hey, it doesn't actually matter. I'm not doing what I'm meant to be doing. I'm not who I'm supposed to be. That's the reason why I feel like crap.
not because my job isn't satisfying. It's because my life isn't satisfying. And more to the point, nobody else made me live this life. I'm doing it all to myself.
Yeah, exactly. I think people get confused when they start chasing down a bunch of repeatedly approved or suggested totems, as opposed to exploring long enough in their life to get a sense of direction or what they'd prefer or what that would make them happy. And those totems have been around forever, and, you know, like I was saying before, kind of promoted by the media, and hasn't really changed. You know, they might change the bottle or the look of the package of the cigarette or just whatever, but it's what people keep telling themselves they need. And obviously these ideas I keep bringing up about mystery or adventure or magic aren't going to come true if you're going back and forth between my job sucks, so I need to get messed up, or I need to go, you know, party and forget everything that happened today. And then that process just repeats itself. And somewhere along the line, you're like paying rent or making parents happy or something like that with the physical things you've accomplished. But it seems like a lot of people are getting lost up in paying for college or getting lost up in one specific field that they know they can accomplish in college, as opposed to being well-rounded. And at that age, I see a decline, because then people just start wanting to get messed up and paying rent. Or on the complete opposite side, you know, having kids or something, which can all be very positive, life-changing experiences, but it's still the daily routine that humans have been doing for however so long. So it's these new ideas we want to embrace in hope to change. If we don't want to change, then the kind of virtual kingdom we've built for so many reasons, I think everyone listening now is aware of, will come, you know, toppling down in some ways. But there are easy and clear paths to get to a better sort of circulatory system for the whole species, ideas and energy.
Well, I think it's really about not accepting mediocrity. You know, if you're really good at something, you know you're really good at something. Basically, I've met many talented people who never, ever, ever exploit their talents and or make a living out of it. And they're really depressed, you know, like they're on medication. Like my friend Jared, for example, he's a really talented blues guitarist and he's on medication and he's depressed. And I said to him, bro, if you were in front of a crowd of 10,000 screaming fans playing your guitar, would you need that medication anymore? See, okay. The reason why you're not feeling good about yourself is because you're not doing what you're meant to be doing. You're not fulfilling your potential. You're simply stagnant, and your body and your mind are telling you that there's something wrong, and you can't ignore it. You have to fulfill it.
It's like the mythologist Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. You know, you have to find that thing that makes you happy or that you want to do. And, you know, I hope that's obviously what you're doing, and that's what we're trying to do with our projects. I know Frank's really trying to push things really hard to get it to work. I mean, it's very hard to have an alternative, you know, interest and then be able to live and focus on that interest and not have to waste all your time at like a low-paying, high hourly job where, you know, you just kind of, you want to drink a beer and watch the game after work instead of research and, you know, develop your, you know, own abilities, meditate or anything. And that's, like I said, it's one of those things we're kind of all here to evolve consciousness, and some of us do that, obviously, and some of us don't. And it really doesn't take everyone, like I said earlier, with people inventing things at synchronous times at the same time. I mean, we're all obviously tapped into some kind of communal ebb and flow of consciousness. And, you know, it's kind of sad that you could look at your friends and family and think, well, you know, ignorance is bliss. You know, I guess that football game's really exciting, but look out your window, man. You know, see what's going on. And, you know, you can't just be sad that not everyone wants to look around at things, you know, like we do, or you kind of just have to let them do what they want while you do what you want, and hopefully, you know, everything is evolving towards the light in the end.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of, like, with musicians and a lot of different kinds of artists, it's easy, even among really creative and eccentric people, for them to want to fall into conversations that'll make that individual feel, you know, depressed or like it's redundant or boring. And pretty soon you feel like you can't, I guess, reach out to anyone. And if you're not researching a lot of stuff and you're just an artist or someone who's trying to work out creative energies that are naturally in you, and you keep coming up against this muck of the same social circles and the same job that, you know, may insist that you, you know, get screwed up after it or whatever because of the nature of the people you deal with who are screwed up during it or something like that. It's, I don't know, it's a vicious bunch of cycles going on.
Yeah, it's a vicious cycle, like the Tour de France. We'll be right back after the break at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com. My very special guest, Frank Zero, and the Violator Hailspore known as Jeremy. Back in a minute. Some kind of way out of here. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Final segment here with my two very special guests, Violator Hailspore, otherwise known as Jeremy, and Frank Zero. Their websites, once again, for Jeremy, is thestygianport.wordpress.com. That's thestygianport.wordpress.com. And for Frank Zero, projectpsycube.blogspot.com. That's projectpsycube.blogspot.com. Kind of like the Tesseract. What else can we really talk about here? I mean, we've only got like, what, 12 minutes left or something. I'd like to get some maybe some personal stories off you or if that's even possible, Frank. Were you ever into normal society, or have you always thought about things a little bit differently and a little bit more intelligently than most?
I was born in the future and moved with a race of aliens back to that's not a thing. I've always been really interested in the occult and in paranormal stuff, but it really, I guess it's been like 14 years I've been concentrating on aliens and mind control and whatever. And now I'm finally getting back to my roots with comic book stuff. But it's really all rooted in loving the material that was in comic books and then seeing that some of it can be true and then getting really into the research enough to be disenchanted with it kind of at the end of the tunnel. But happy that I learned a lot of this stuff and that, you know, I know I'm acquainted with different possibilities and ways to explain comic book concepts in real life if they are true. That's confusing enough.
Well, and what did your dad do?
He's in the military. I'm not really too close to him. He's a teacher now.
I've always found that, if you've got... There's usually two reasons why people get into these kind of elements of research. And there's a lot of eclectic fields, but it's either, A1, you're a really talented person and you've gotten really high up and you had some kind of a fall from grace due to an element of scumbaggery within the organization you were working for, or two, your parents are kind of like that and you sort of pick it up off of them and it's sort of inevitable.
Yeah, I think for me there was a lot of elements that were in the fiction that just have always appealed to me that may have something to do with real life or for me trying to uncover something in real life in a Mulder kind of way. But I had some really great grandparents that raised me. And my grandpa in particular was very, very tedious with information. And he wound up working very closely with the D-Day Museum for a lot of the things they did here in New Orleans. And I think they've benefited very much from having him. And his kind of attention to detail with World War II history got me interested in certainly aspects of military history and things like that. But when I started applying that, I guess, to, you know, trading card statistics and then finally UFO abduction accounts, it all came very naturally as a filing system and taking notes and doing research and then eventually research interviewing people. So I got a gig with theexaminer.com, which I still do to some capacity, where I was just basically had a kind of journalistic license to talk to all kind of authors and people who worked on the comics and cartoons and things. And that really boosted me into, I guess, networking and understanding these higher realms, the people who are really writing these books or really writing these cartoons or whatever. And now I'm at a place where I think I've probably sucked in enough data. I'm really just excited to get working on the A-Star comic and expanding that as far as I can, and hopefully one day that'll be, you know, a movie or a cartoon or other mediums that I can expand on and stuff that I've studied for so long I can go back and use some of those people that I've met who I think are very valuable in those fields and reintegrate them, which I've already started to do with comics and cartoons and conspiracy theories, and just see where that adventure takes me, as opposed to trying to take everything literally or write, you know, giant volumes that might appear in hindsight like Alex Jones or William Cooper like or something. I just rather help people develop their imagination and help them with bigger and better ideas or something.
Mm. And Jeremy, what about you? How did you get into this? Do you have some kind of a fall from grace or? Jeremy, are you there?
Sorry about that. No, I really just kind of have always seen connections in things. I never, I grew up a military brat, but I was never really into, you know, anything weird, conspiracy or pro-military, anything. It was pretty much standard, you know, childhood, except that I've always seen connections and things, and I started piecing those connections together, and I started to see a, you know, story form, mostly in movies, but I've also been always attracted to the same types of movies. I mean, my favorite movie is They Live, where an alien force rules the world, you know, the world's elite, and they live underground. But then if you take it from my perspective, they live 6 feet under, and they're actually called ghouls. They're never called aliens. They look like dead people. So is this the other worlds that, like I said, was influencing our imagination, the course of history, perhaps, even just acting as a muse for people to make movies such as They Live, or the original story that it was based on? It's, you know, I just kind of like to follow these threads and put them out there as sort of a story, and if people find them interesting, and I hope they do, then maybe they could build off of that and keep, you know, evolving the ideas and keep going forward with it.
Now, how old were you when you started to kind of make all these connections, or did it happen from a very young age?
Very young, you know, childhood, just watching all these movies. I mean, a lot of them were, you know, just my favorite movies had a lot of similar themes. And I kind of, you know, 9/11 happened, and all of a sudden everyone's seeing connections everywhere. And then so many things have happened since that really it's, you know, I mean, it's fairly easy today to pretty much, that's what synchromysticism is. You could find connections literally anywhere and use them to sort of build a story and tell a story. And some people use it to predict future events. Some people use it to prove a conspiracy. And I kind of use it just to sort of evolve consciousness, evolve ideas, you know, keep trying to figure out what's really going on here. You know, I'm like Pythagoras or whoever it says, like, the only thing I'm sure of is my own ignorance. You know, no one knows. Anyone who says they know knows is a liar. You know, anyone who's channeled the pure, true information is, you know, psychotic. It's no one really knows the truth, and there's probably multiple truths. And you've got to really just kind of find your own path and just take what suits you and throw away the rest. And I would, you know, some people, they latch onto one thing and they make that their life's work. You know, the red pill conspiracy, you know, theory, truther movement, and other people, it's, you know, something else, and other people, it's something else. And they don't really see the connections that everything sort of has its own, you know, story, and it's all interrelated. And you can take a movie about something, can tie it to chemtrails or whatever. And that's kind of what we do in synchromysticism. I focus more just on movies as mythology and the whole hero's journey that we're all really on. And movies are, you know, like you were saying before, they seem to be tired, same old themes. I mean, if anyone who saw the Avatar movie, you know, it was great special effects. I saw it in 3D and IMAX, and it was a fantastic looking movie, but the story was, you know, Dances with Wolves or whatever. It's the same story, and the reason is because there is really that underlying sort of heroic story, and it's not, I don't want people to see movies as something separate. I mean, you're really in mythology when you read the story of Hercules or whatever. That's you. The person reading the myth is the hero in the myth. And in a lot of movies, which I'm a movie apologist, I hate TV, but I love movies. It's kind of weird. I mean, there's propaganda in both, I'm sure. But, you know, the movies really do kind of follow mostly that same typical heroic theme. And you have to wonder, maybe it has an effect on your unconscious mind. And maybe there's sure propaganda. I mean, you know, plenty of movies like the one I was saying was all about George Bush, you know. But are you picking that up, or are you really picking up sort of the hero's journey? And
I've always wondered if seeing heroes on movies in a fictional context would make you think that heroes aren't really real, and heroes certainly can't be you.
Right, and that's, well, you could take like Dirty Harry's movies and, you know, say, well, sometimes a hero can be you, like the Dorner case right now, although not much of a hero, he's kind of a weird personality, but like Falling Down or other movies, God Bless America was one, I think 2 years ago it came out, where basically they go on a killing spree to kill all the people that they hate, but, you know, we're not going to take that literally, but, you know, some movies like, say, Network, that came out in like 1976, was all about TV, was telling you it's all propaganda, it's a show. They're in it for the ratings.
I've watched all three of those movies for the first time in the last like month.
There's some synchronicity for you. I just watched a movie called John Dies at the End, which is fantastic, like weird synchronous movie. And some guy who's probably an alien in the movie says, "You ever notice when you hear a word for the first time, you're going to hear it again in the next 24 hours?" And that happens so much. You'll hear a word and you've never heard before, and all of a sudden it's written down somewhere you're reading or you hear it. It's a very weird, you know, it's a very weird world we live in, and I don't want people to get caught up in the conspiracy angle that, you know, the government, they're not, like Robert Anton Wilson says, you know, there's no overarching Illuminati conspiracy. Look at the people involved. I mean, are you kidding me? It's not possible. There's so many little pockets of people on all sides, you know, fighting, vying for power and control. And, you know, you can focus on parts of it or the whole thing. And I don't like it when someone like comes up to me and just learned about, say, chemtrails, and it's the only thing on their mind. There's a lot, you know, more going on. You can talk about the Fed or whatever that we have here. I'm sure you have a national bank there, too, that does the same thing to your fake money. But you know, there's just so many things going on, and I like to draw connections between all of these things, but especially movies, and kind of tell a story and hopefully, I don't want to say wake people up, but kind of let people realize that they can think for themselves and they can see things differently, have an imagination, and not in the negative contest of thinking of things that are fanciful, but in the, you know, positive contest of thinking outside the box, as they say.
And writing your own mythology is something vastly different from letting headlines tell your unconscious what you're actually worried about or want to talk about. They're vastly, vastly different adventures, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, final words I'd like to say here is, in terms of Disney movies, has anybody seen a Disney movie where both the main character's parents survive?
Not possible.
Think of offhand, no.
Isn't that interesting? And you know, And there was a conspiracy theory once upon a time that there was a thing called the Mafia, where all the big crime bosses were actually connected. And they said, it's a conspiracy theory. It doesn't exist. Turned out it did. In fact, I think there's a shockingly large amount of conspiracy theories that people thought did not be true that later turned out to be. So we just don't know. Just be open. Thank you guys very much for your time. Frank Zero and Violator Hellspawn, otherwise known as Jeremy. We'll see you again sometime, folks.
Thanks.